You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Michael Roizen, MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have a great guest this half hour. We always do. And by the way, you can ask us questions at udocs@gmail.com. None of the usual people write in have written in. I'm worried about my email not working because I haven't gotten a call on or an email on this email, which I use for the show, since 2:54 this afternoon. So Don or Muriel or Marcia, who always write in, maybe all three of you have taken the program off, but if you're any of you are out there, just drop me a line just so I know the Gmail is working. Udocs, Y-O-U-D-O-C-S, @gmail.com is a way of asking questions, and I'll put them to David Linden, who is the author of Touch. It's a wonderful book. It's a wonderful book because David Linden is a really great scientist. He was the editor of Journal of Neurophysiology. That's no slouchy journal. That's a really hard, what you would call hard science journal. And he describes touch and the mechanisms of touch in a really lucid and with enviable lucidity, as I like to say, because it's so good and so easy to understand. This book really is the science of hand, heart, and mind, as the subtitle. You can address David Linden, davidlinden.org, davidlinden.org. And he is, a professor at Johns Hopkins, no slouchy school either. David, tell us, how did you decide to get into this field and write a book about touch?
Well, there were a couple of different reasons. This is the third book I've written about brain function for a general audience. And I always have my eyes open for a topic that I think is central to people's human experience, where there is some new science to be told and where someone else hasn't just recently written about it. And touch, the topic of touch, filled, all of those three categories. And in addition, it just turned out that, while I was writing it, I realized that my home institution, Johns Hopkins University, was a world center of touch research. And so over lunch with my friendly colleagues, I was hearing stories about the forefront of touch research every day, and really I became a fanboy of touch research. I don't work on it in my own lab, but I admire it, and so that's what got me going.
And will we get one on smell one of these days?
Well, you might get one on food, which would encompass both smell and taste and appetite and motivation and all those things.
Great. Because I think smell and the smell and taste of food is something that is underappreciated, if you will, and hopefully someone can write something in the lay in a way that explains it to us normal humans without having to know a ton of neuroscience. This book does that, and you talk about touch and child development. So I wanted to, if you will, touch on that. Thank you. Pam did email me, so my email is working. So, Pam, thank you for at least showing me that my email is working. I was getting worried since no one had emailed me of the usual people who email me. Like Pam, you can email and ask questions, udocs, Y-O-U-D-O-C-S, @gmail.com. And now Don has emailed me, so I feel better. Anyway, Don writes, in soggy, waterlogged Cleveland, we have had about 3 inches of rain today. But let's talk about touch and child development, and then I'm going to get into one of the questions just asked. But go ahead, touch and child development, how does it influence it?
Well, it turns out that touch is absolutely critical for normal development of children. You can be born blind and have a perfectly great life and be cognitively normal and have good relationships and have a family and a career and everything. The same if you're born deaf. But if you're born with your sense of touch intact, but you are deprived of interpersonal touch in the first 2 years of your life, then a disaster ensues. And we know this mostly from orphanages in Romania in the 80s and in the early 90s in the regime of Ceausescu and in the years that followed shortly thereafter, where there were these grossly understaffed orphanages, and basically the babies and toddlers were just left by themselves alone in their cribs, and they developed these horrible self-soothing rocking movements. They had terrible attachment disorders, cognitive delays, but it wasn't just problems with their mental function. They actually had problems with the development of the digestive system and the immune system. And the good news is that if intervention came with even a half an hour a day of touching by a caregiver, that was sufficient to reverse the deleterious effect. But the bad news is if it didn't come in the first 2 years of life, then basically you're imprinted forever. In other words, these problems that develop as a result of a lack of loving touch will then stay with you for your entire life.
And now we often hear that breastfeeding is a good thing, and that even if you're doing formula feeding, you should put them against your skin if you're a woman. Or even,
that's right,
I suppose,
and actually not just for women. Dads can do it too. Right, and so actually what you're talking about, I believe, is called kangaroo care. And it was developed in a neonatal intensive care unit in Colombia, a unit that had very little equipment, had a terrible infant mortality rate. And their motivation was just to kind of keep the infants warm because they didn't have enough incubators for their preterm babies. But what they realized was, in addition to help keeping the kids warmer, having skin-to-skin contact has an enormous benefit from the touching, from either mom or dad, and it benefits not just preemie babies, but all babies. We are hardwired to take comfort from appropriate interpersonal touch. It conveys a sense of safety, and this is very important in early life. And in both humans and also in critters who don't get that parental touching, mostly maternal touching, early in life, when they grow up, they have exaggerated stress responses and elevated stress hormone levels and a whole sequelae of problems that result from them.
And now the other part of this, and by the way, we're talking with David Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N, author of Touch, the Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind, and you're hearing exactly how precise he is scientifically, but how easy it is to understand. You can go to davidlinden.org for more information. But talk about the, if you will, what is, do women have a better sense of touch than men?
That's a really interesting question. So it turns out that if you take, say, 1,000 women and 1,000 men, and you bring them into the lab, and you ask them to feel with their fingertips some very finely spaced ridges that are pointing in one direction or another, and to use that as an indication of their fine touch sensation. And of course, the fingertip is a very sensitive place on the body for fine touch discrimination. What you find is that on average, the women do better than the men. And so you might think, oh, well, maybe there's something special about women this way. I hear music coming up. Does that mean I should?
That means we have a hard break. We'll finish this answer right after the break. We're talking with David Linden, author of Touch. And we'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
It all started with a seed and a dream to grow sesame in the United States. Now, farmer Jimmy Kinder and others have thriving sesame fields in Oklahoma and other locations. Now, Harvest Stone is more passionate than ever about bringing you delicious and nutritious whole grain snacks. From our crispy organic bowl, original or cheese mixes, to our organic original sesame seed, tomato basil, and cracked pepper crackers, we're committed to using only the highest quality grains and seeds grown by farmers we know and trust, like Jimmy. After all, the best way to create snacks we feel good about is to start with ingredients we feel good about. Snack on something real. Check out HarvestStoneSnacks.com and be sure to request Harvest Stone products at a store near you. Harvest Stone has your snacking covered.
It's illegal and dangerous for teens to drink any alcohol and then drive. Still, 1 in 10 high school teens drank and got behind the wheel of a car in 2011. If you're a parent, be aware that when teens drink, it's usually to get drunk. Teenagers can't legally buy alcohol, but many get it from their homes or the homes of their friends. Drinking and driving is never okay. Make sure your teenager has a safe way to get home in case they're out with a teen driver who's been drinking. Put this in a parent-teen driving agreement, which should also include wearing a seatbelt and following their state's graduated driver licensing laws every time they're behind the wheel. Find a sample at www.cdc.gov/parentsarethekey. Parents really are the key to safe teen driving. Learn more at www.cdc.gov/vital signs.
There's more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show,
presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. I'm talking with David Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N, davidlinden.org. And the book is, that we're talking about is, that he wrote, that's a wonderful book, and you can tell that by the way he is both precise and easy to understand, is called Touch, T-O-U-C-H, The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind. We were talking about women having a little more sensitive touch in the laboratory if you took 1,000 of them, and that's when we got interrupted by the appropriate commercials. If we don't get interrupted by the commercials, we can't have the show, so please do tolerate them. But David, talk to us more about women and their touch.
Right, so if you look at like a wide range of 1,000 women and 1,000 men, the women on average do better. But if you look, what you find is that on average women have slightly smaller fingertips than men. And if you look carefully at the data, the men who happen to have unusually small fingers do as well as your average woman. And the women who happen to have unusually large fingers do as poorly as the average man. So here's the reason. It's not like a difference in women's brains or a difference in like the softness of women's skin that allows it to be indented more easily. It's just that you have a set number of fine touch nerve endings in your finger pad. And if your finger pad is bigger, then they spread over more area and the gaps between them are larger and you're slightly less sensitive. And so the reason that you have an average difference between women and men is a rather trivial reason. It's just because women on average have smaller fingertips.
Now, we've got a set of questions, and Donna asked one. When you're in love, why does touch feel different, and is it really heightened?
So that is a great question. I think, and it comes up onto something that, you know, a very, very central point for all of neurobiology. And that is, we like to think that our senses provide us the most accurate representation of the external world. And that if we want to, we can act purely logically based on that data. And that turns out to be utterly and completely wrong. In other words, all of our sensation is dependent upon the situation, upon our past experience, upon our personal history and expectation. And so the example that I like to use is imagine a caress from your sweetheart on your arm during a very loving, connected time. You know, you're sitting by the fire, feeling mellow, and everything's good. Feels real nice. Now imagine that very same touch in the very same place on your arm with the very same pressure and the very same speed. Everything about the touch is the same, but now it's in the middle of an argument with your sweetheart. It's not just that these things feel the same, but upon reflection you think about them differently. They actually feel different in the moment. And the reason for that is that higher areas of our brain that compute things like context and social cognition and fear and anxiety and love and lust and all these things, they send signals to the parts of our brain that are processing the facts of touch, and they modify them. So our gestalt sensation is a mixture of context and the pure touch sensation. Another great, my favorite cartoon, there's a man and a woman driving in a car, and the man's behind the wheel, and the woman has a bag of groceries on her lap. And the man says, "P.U., what smells like farts in here?" And the woman says, "That is the expensive French cheese we just bought." And he said, then the man says, "Oh, well, in that case, what smells so delicious in here?" Right? It's the exact that's same right. sensation. It's just your expectation that changes it. And that's what happens. That's what changes your touch sensations when you're in love.
Now, is that also true with orgasm? In other words, why does orgasm feel so good? Is that relate to the same thing?
Well, the reason orgasm feels so good is that it produces activation of not only the part of the brain that's involved in just telling you the facts of touch, where on my body am I being touched, in what fashion, how intensely, but it also produces activation of the brain's pleasure circuitry, a center called the medial forebrain pleasure circuit. Medial just means in the middle, forebrain means towards the front, and these are neurons that use the neurotransmitter dopamine. And so this circuitry is activated during orgasm. It's also activated if you take a puff of a cigarette or inhale cocaine or smoke cannabis or drink alcohol or take heroin or exercise really well or eat food when you're hungry or drink water when you're thirsty. All these things that are deeply pleasurable and rewarding activate this circuit. So if you have damage to your pleasure circuit, then you can have an orgasm that's not pleasurable. You think, well, how could that possibly be? Well, it's more convulsive than compelling. It's more like whoops than like what one would normally experience.
Now, if touch is good, which is pleasurable a lot of times if you're in the mood, then a massage should feel really good when you're in the mood, if you say, I'm going to relax with it. And if you're tense and say, I've got to worry about things when you're going for a massage, it should feel less good. Is that right?
Well, that's right. In other words, all these sensations are completely dependent upon your expectations, your mood, your context, your anxiety, right? Imagine an arm around the shoulder. Well, an arm around the shoulder from your buddy is different than an arm around your shoulder from your domineering boss, which is different than an arm around a shoulder from someone hitting on you in a bar, right? They all feel different, and they all feel different because of context. And the realism that the very same physical sensation can feel so different is because what we experience is a blend of the pure physical sensation and all these other signals about what's happening and what has happened to us in that moment in our lives up to that moment.
Now, another question on love, if you will, is what happens when an orgasm is faked? Does the skin react the same way?
Well, it turns out that if you really want to tell if your partner is faking an orgasm, there's one part that's impossible to fake, and that is that the rectal muscles contract about 5 times per second during a genuine orgasm. So in one experiment, they had women being stimulated to orgasm manually while they're in the brain scanner, and they have a probe in their tuchus, and they have the other women doing their best fake orgasm. And the fake orgasm doesn't activate either the brain's pleasure center, nor does it cause that that rectal flutter.
Well, the book is called Touch, and it is The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind by David J. Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N. It's a wonderful book. He explains complex things just incredibly well and compellingly with great stories, as you've heard. DavidJLinden.org, The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind. The book is called Touch. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. You can always find us archived at RadioMD.com. Stay well.
Antioxidants. You've heard of them, but do you know what they're good for or where to get them? This is Sylvia Escott Stump of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Antioxidants, they destroy the free radicals that cause cellular damage, and eating foods that are rich in antioxidants may help prevent cancer and heart disease. These foods include red wine in addition to grape juice, whole grain pasta, eggs, seafood, and canned beans, brightly colored vegetables, carrots, squash, broccoli, all the peppers, sweet potatoes, tomatoes, and kale are other tasty sources. And for those of you with a sweet tooth, good news! Honey, brown sugar, and maple syrup, in addition to fruits like blueberries, cantaloupe, peaches, and strawberries, also contain significant levels of antioxidants. Encouraging you to eat right, I'm registered dietitian Sylvia Escott Stump with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
How would you like to turn back the clock to a more youthful you without surgery or painful injections in the comfort of your own home? A weekly Purigenix collagen mask and daily serum application will make your face look smoother, lift sagging and loose skin, and restore the promise of youth to skin weakened by aging, sun damage, and acne scarring. This amazing product has been sold only to plastic surgeons and skincare professionals, but Purigenix is offering it to the listeners of Dr. Suzanne Wellness for Life Radio for $300 below the retail price with free overnight shipping. Simply go to drsuzanne.com/collagen to receive this special offer and turn back time to a sexy, younger you. Again, that's drsuzanne.com/collagen.